Sangeche danso gejo nam la janjo bado dane kapsunji dagi jinzo enji pese namji Jola penche sangye jomba sho sangye chedan sage jonam la janjo vado dane kyab suji Dagi jinzo enji pese namji Jola penche sangye jompacho Sangye che dan sage jonam la Janjo bhadu dane kapsuji Dagi jinzo enchi pese namji Jola penche sangye jompacho Semchen tam jade vadan deve judan dempa juji Dune dan dune ji judan java juji Dune me pende vadan padam in java juji Nidin chadan nidan javetan non chempola nepa juji. Vendan savela marim boji. Dagi jivom vede dhan chola. Gajin chempa gane jesonte Kuson togi nga jom tsado sa And again, taking a deep breath of freedom. Ask yourself, am I wide awake? What can I do in case I'm not wide awake? Yesterday, we were talking about alternating, tensing and relaxing, huh? Vitalizing and relaxing the system, and to learn how to do that. There's a little bit more to say about that. When we tense, when we uplift our awareness, our clarity, we don't tense everything. You know, there is no need. To sit like that, you know, it's not, you know, there's no need. We don't do that. We just, in a relaxed way, but we take care that we take in more light or that we sit a little bit more straight, but we do it in a relaxed way, right? Okay. And when we relax, also, we don't relax everything. We only relax the unnecessary effort, okay? That which creates dukkha, that's what we relax. So most people, when we hear relax, which is an instruction which we like to give, which is, of course, very helpful, then we have the dimmer, huh? We have the dimmer and the whole system goes down. The muscle tonus, why do you relax the muscle tonus? Only if it creates suffering, right? If it creates tension. But a good muscle tonus is very important for the practice. Only if it becomes the seed of an identification of dukkha, then it's good to also relax that. Otherwise, a naturally straight posture is fantastic for meditation. Okay. So there is so much differentiation to do in what we call vitalizing. What does it really mean? How do I vitalize my consciousness? For example, by bringing in some movement, some visualization, or I can do it by mantra recitation, I can vitalize myself, yes? For those who use mantra, for example, when we do silent mantra recitation, you don't even notice outside. Then we can do it with moving the lips, no sound, with a slight sound that you only we can hear it, like, or we can do it with a loud sound, or we can do it singing. Each level has a different degree of energizing our, or energizing, I don't know how you say it in English, energizing our system, yeah? So you choose the way you use the mantra, you choose how you use your body. So everywhere there is this fine-tuning. Yes. With the relaxation as well. If it's about mental relaxation, maybe we can relax the grasping to thinking, to conceptual thinking. Maybe we can relax that and not relax and dim down the luminosity of mind. You see, we need to differentiate that. Like in the body, we differentiate, we can relax so much without falling down, right? We can have a very relaxed stand or a very relaxed sitting and still not fall down, because just what is necessary is maintained. And the same thing with the luminosity and clarity of mind. We can relax the conceptual thinking and enter a heightened state of clarity. Try that. Not thinking and being very clear. Okay? Very important. So, relaxing the breathing, relaxing the senses, and entering more and more clarity. And then inside that clarity, relaxing the clinging to the clarity. This you have to do by trust. Trusting the natural clarity. You can also do it by joy, enjoying the natural luminosity of being aware. Okay, thank you very much. This is important, yes? This is very important. Fine-tuning. And little remark about the word grasping or clinging. Holding on to something. Holding on to something is a really good thing if you want something not to fall down, right? So holding on. It's very, very good. Hold on to your child when you cross the street. Yes, it's good. Yes. And of course, clinging to thoughts is said to be not such a good thing in meditation. But when we talk, we have to keep the red thread, right? My sentences have to have a meaning one after the other. I have to keep online. Yes. It's like, hey, very important. But this is not dukkha, right? So we relax that grasping, which creates tension, which creates stress, which creates dukkha, but not the capacity to maintain a course of action, to maintain a coherent speech. Yeah, we need to be able to hold on to an idea that is useful. Hold on. Okay? You need to be able to do that. Between the beginning of a sentence and the end of a sentence and the end of a story, we have to be able to keep the storyline. So, this is not a grasping that creates dukkha. Okay? Actually, this capacity to think coherently is an expression of shamatha. It's a fruit of shamatha. It's a fruit of a calm mind, because it's very easy to keep the continuity of a thinking, of a thought, of some explanation to be given if your mind doesn't go off in different directions. You don't have so many different associations, you don't make so many side turns in what you say. One thing to go through, yeah? So a very good way of holding on, yeah? This is not creating dukkha, it's making life easier. So here again, very important when we say grasping, clinging, and so on. You know, like, for example, clinging to a partnership, holding on, all of this is attachment, relationships are attachment. How about to be attached, to have a continuity of a relationship without it creating dukkha? How would that be? That would be good, right? Quite nice. Yeah. There was a teacher, she was called Machikma, Machik Labdran, great teacher of Mahamudra in the 12th century in Tibet, at the same time as Milarepa. And she was fantastic. And I mean, she had so many students. She had tens of thousands of students. She was in the beginning the starter of the lineage of Chu. But she said, "You have passion. You have passion. You love your partner. You love your children. That's great. Love more. Love all the children. Love all. You know, don't make it smaller, but like, hey, and then you will see you can't grasp, you can't hold on to some personal me wanting, but yes, extend it, go for it, yes, go for it into the maximum passion for life, for beings, for relationships." Incredible nice way of saying it. And she was a mother, actually a model mother, because her partner was taking care of the children, three children, while she was teaching. So 12th century, you know, in Tibet. Incredible. I love it. And he was a yogi as well. So they shared roads the other way around. And Machik Ma means the unique mother, the single mother. And she was giving teachings in a little bit different way than the male society. Yeah. So she would never say that reduce, you know, like get detached from your family, but actually spread the attachment to everybody. Be mega attached. Yeah. And that also does the trick, you know. If you are mega attached to everyone, like your own children, then fantastic. You get it. It's not dukkha anymore. It's not that. So I'm talking about this just to make us realize that we have to have a very fine look at actually what we are relaxing, what we are letting go of. It would be so stupid to let go of a fantastic relationship. Yeah, it would be so stupid because that's friendship. You know, it would be so, we can practice all of that. We can live all of that by just relaxing those parts that create suffering. And this is wisdom. Wisdom who knows, who differentiates. Yeah, who differentiates that which actually creates unnecessary tension in mind. Okay. These were some thoughts that were left from yesterday. I've been holding on to them. Yep. I think this afternoon we can go a little bit more in a little bit structured presentation of the nature of mind. Yes, a little bit structured. You might say, how is this possible? Yeah, well, I did it already at the teachers' meeting in Clear, so we can go slowly also in that. Yes, I mentioned everything already to you, so it's very familiar. And these Mahasiddhas, these great accomplished ones, they have developed an art of pointing to that which cannot be described. What? The art of pointing to the moon. Remember? Pointing to the moon. The finger which points to the moon. Oh, sorry. Doesn't even point to the moon. Yeah, the old lady's finger pointing to the moon. Look, the full moon. Actually, the finger is pointing to somewhere else, but we get the idea. We get the idea. Yes? And definitely the finger is not the moon. That's for sure. So the words that I'm going to say are far from being the moon. Okay? Far from that. over the centuries has developed a nice way of describing the mind's functioning in five aspects, where you can include the five emotions, the five skandhas, the five elements, the five aspects of timeless awareness, you know, wonderful way, great way. And let's start with that nature of mind. Remember, we talked about the spacious mind. Huh? We had that so often. That would be like in the center of our, you know, of our mandala of awakening. Definitely, this is the spaciousness that it's like the first thing we notice when we search for the mind, this mind that cannot be found. We enter into an incredibly spacious experience. Because nothing there, yet somehow still experience. There is something, some not a thing, but life goes on. And so the first quality we usually encounter when we search for the mind, you know, in this inquiry, all phenomena are mind, where can the mind be found, you know, in this inquiry, when we look for the mind. Oh, spacious, yeah. Like, oh. And this space is called, in Sanskrit, Dharma Dhatu. Dharma, you know, phenomena in this sense, also truth, but here it has the meaning of phenomena, and Dhatu means space. Actually, it is the space in which everything is possible. Like as an empty room where all the space is available. You can do anything in that room. And this is the basic nature of mind. Anything can appear. All the experiences of whoever in this world of samsara nirvana, everything can appear. And this is the I think modern philosophers, they might then want to call this like the sphere of potentiality, something like this. They will have nice words. And it's always meaning the same. It's like, wow. All the cinema can play. The whole game of suffering and happiness, of enlightenment and drowning in the ocean of samsara, all of that. This is the potential of our mind. And the prime experience is one of spaciousness. In that spaciousness, we encounter that life is going on. And the basic, why do we know in that spacious experience that we are still alive? Because there is still an awareness going on. We still feel that awareness is there, is alive, it continues. It's like a vibrant basic awareness that is continuing. And this continuity is like the water element, you know? Space is, of course, space element, but the water element is like that which connects. You know, when you take dry earth, it's like dust. But when you mix it with water, you can form a ball from it. That's the cohesive potential of the water. So what we notice, next quality in the is like experiences are happening, there's a lot going on, and there's a continuity of life experience, uninterrupted, cannot be blocked, unhindered. So this unhindered continuity, that would be another quality of basic mind that we encounter. Lots of stuff happening, yes, potential for everything and this underlying continuity never stops. This awareness never stops. That's quite fine. So we have space and we have water. Then we notice that whatever appears, whatever is happening there, like we said before, it is self-liberating. It has no substance, no solidity. It has, from that point of view, it has one taste. Yeah. One taste of the empty nature. It is the one taste of ungraspable, changing nature. Not solid. And this is like the earth element. This is completely reliable. If you want to rely on something in this universe, rely on the empty nature. That's for sure. Like you can rely on the changing nature. It's just another word. Everything changes because it has no substance. It's not solid. And everything appears because nothing is solid, so nothing obstructs. By the way, the second aspect of timeless awareness, the one with the water, we call mirror-like wisdom, mirror-like timeless awareness, because in a mirror, imagine my hand was a mirror, then the mirror, when looking here, when shown this side, will reflect everything in here. And the moment you turn it, it will reflect everything there. The moment this goes there, everything. There is no blockage to the next appearances. Completely unhindered appearance in the mirror. This is the unhindered, unblocked, continuous appearance of life, of our living experience. That's why mirror is connected to the water, because, well, in old times they didn't have mirrors. They were looking into the water to see their own face. Yes? Okay? That's the even surface of the water, which is due to the cohesion of the water, it makes such an even surface that you can look like into a mirror. That's the cohesion, yeah? That's the, because it is so continuous, then all the phenomena can appear in it. So that's the mirror-like aspect, and the one with the empty nature, the ungraspable nature, this is called the timeless awareness of equality. All phenomena are equal in their taste of, in this one taste of ungraspable empty nature. So now, so far, if we only describe the basic functioning of mind as spacious, continuous, and empty, then something important would be missing. It could be very vague. It could be a very vague life experience, but it's not. It's very precise. So the fourth aspect that is being described is like the fire which makes everything light, the sun. The image of fire here means that which gives light, like the sun gives light or fire at night gives light. So you can see. And this is the finely distinguishing aspect of our mind. It doesn't only have the potential to experience, but it also finely distinguishes all the experiences. Finely distinguishing sounds. Finely distinguishing colors. Finely distinguishing words, which are also sounds. Finally distinguishing meanings, finally distinguishing physical sensations, everywhere, in all areas of our life, finally distinguishing. And this capacity does not go away. This capacity to finally distinguish is actually very much needed to understand. To understand life. So making differences is a very natural capacity of mind. Distinguishing red from green and from yellow and from blue, very necessary. Distinguishing what is good food, what is not so good food, very necessary. And many yogis, when they practice, they might be quite good in going towards a spacious mind, a continuous fluid awareness, knowing the empty nature. But when it comes to finally distinguishing, somehow they block their consciousness. They're not, it's as if they block their life energy. You know, it becomes partial. Actually, it's a very natural capacity of mind to distinguish. We call that the luminosity. This is the clarity aspect. Yeah, this is actually how we are able to see in the outer world. In the outer world, we see everything because there is light. The inner light does not depend on having the eyes open. The inner light is that we can finally distinguish, like just close the eyes for a moment and move your body. And you can finally, without having the eyes open, you can distinguish body postures, body feelings. Yeah? Maybe I can feel the movement of the t-shirt on my skin. I can see when I risk maybe to fall and, you know, all of that. Yeah? So this is the capacity to finally distinguish. Now, if we block the senses, and if we don't want to think, if we don't want to be alive, then we go into states of mind where we notice less and less until even the capacity to understand goes away. That is, for example, in the Arupa Jhanas, yeah, especially the number 7 and 8, then you don't understand because the mind is not finally differentiating anymore. And doesn't even know whether one is alive or not in a way, you know, whether perception or non-perception, for those who know. So really, hey, come on, this is a natural capacity of mind which immediately comes back if we don't block it, the capacity to finally know. And we need it to understand the Dharma. We need it to understand what is the difference between liberation and bondage? We needed to understand the questions of others, the needs of others, to respond to them. So and this is natural to us. Yeah, it's highly developed in our mind. So this is linked to the fire and is called the finally distinguishing or perfectly distinguishing wisdom or timeless awareness. And now, we still have the wind. Huh? The wind is missing. Still have the element of wind. Movement, right? Wind is movement. Wind makes a change. It provokes changes everywhere. And actually, the wind here is the activity of mind. It's the inherent dynamic activity. Now, the activity of mind in an awakened mind is called all accomplishing wisdom, all perfecting timeless awareness. That's the term for it. And actually, this activity is an activity of the mind to understand the perfection of now. That's why it is all perfecting. It's all accomplishing because it leads us into freedom. It is the activity of the mind finding the way into freedom, into awakening. It's that natural, you can say, activity of a mind which we let free to go into the natural place, to the natural state. And that's the all-perfecting activity, that which sees that the experience of now is already perfect, that it doesn't need to be changed. So these are the five aspects. If you want to explain the nature of mind in a structured way, you have these five. Yeah, I repeat them because I see some of you are taking, or many of you are taking notes, and then you might want to check the notes. We have the Dhamma Dhatu awareness, the space, sphere of potentiality. We have the continuity, the water element, this mirror-like quality, unhindered appearances, unhindered flow. So there's a flowing, continuous quality to awareness, going through or connecting all life situations, you know, all the time, connecting everything. And then we have this taste of always the same tastes, ungraspable, empty nature. And this is called the equality, the timeless awareness of equality. Equal in the sense that whether it is suffering or whether it is happiness, both, all of the phenomena, they have this same nature of being self-liberating, of not being substantial. And this we can rely on like on the earth. Okay. And this is not all. They're not just equal in being ungraspable. They are also equal in the fact that they can be finely differentiated. Actually, as you know, no moment of experience is like any other experience in the world. Just now, and just now. Just now, and just now. You see how finely we notice the slight differences. It's not identical. We are able to finally differentiate a moments of experience succeeding each other, which are almost identical, but some little thing, some little aspect of our experience has changed. And this is this luminosity. That's the clarity we are talking about. The fire element. The finely distinguishing timeless awareness. And that's a natural quality of our mind, which becomes more and more present the more the mind opens and leads to all the fine perceptions, also extrasensory perceptions, leads to many fine perceptions that were not accessible to us before. We are, in a way, through meditation, that means we're relaxing the mind, we hear better, we see better, we think better. You know, all the senses are improving, and then comes our old age, and then it gets less again. But, yeah. finally differentiating, and we finally, you know, our heart, mind, you know, when I talk about this, I was talking so much about the resonance, yeah, about, and then the finally resonating with an environment, with people, with beings, all of this increases. It becomes more and more liberated. So our sensitivity is more and more liberated. So it's not meditation, using meditation to close and protect, but it's actually liberating inherent capacities of finally distinguishing phenomena. Okay, that was the repetition of the fire element, and now the all-perfecting timeless awareness. Remember, that's the activity. And I can explain this activity best if I compare it with neurotic activity. The neurotic, samsaric activity, due to neurosis, our constant dissatisfaction, this dissatisfied mind, never happy, always wants to improve the world. And we always want to improve our meditation. And yeah, it's not good enough. Let's make it better. And my mind, maybe my mind is not good enough. I want to improve my mind. Anyhow, I want to improve everything. Whether it is my house, my car, my garden, my mind, my even I want to improve my partner, but this is, I have given up long ago. So you see, you try, but you give up sometimes. Now, this is the activity normally. Normally, we always want to improve. Now, when you are in this open awareness of awakening, then the activity is actually seeing the perfection and helping everybody else to see the perfection. Helping everybody to see that awakening is already there. And that's how all the wishes of the Buddhas are accomplished. In this sense, it is the all-accomplishing activity, yeah, the all-accomplishing timeless awareness. And it is all-perfecting, which is the same word, perfecting and accomplishing. It's the all-perfecting because it shows that every now, every moment is in itself a perfect moment of awakening. Yeah, so when we talk about Tara, green Tara, as also this karma element, this wind element of this fifth family, yeah, this then she is not rushing everywhere to improve the world, but she is rushing everywhere to show people, hey, the world is already perfect. Hey, the world is already perfect. Don't make so many problems, my dear. Hey, relax. World is perfect. You know, so that is an example of enlightened activity. Enlightened activity is not trying to improve samsara. That would be futile. It's a waste of energy. Cannot be improved. We have to bring people and everybody to senses to see and to enter that natural perfection. Okay? That's the meaning of the activity of mind. So the activity of an awakened mind does not go anymore in the same direction as the activity of a mind full of fear and hopes. Actually, it goes in the direction of being in that perfection and communicating that perfection. And that's what the Buddha did. You know, that's what all the masters do. When you read the sayings of the masters, you know, they're all communicating that. It's from that place they speak. Okay, so this was an overview of the five aspects of timeless awareness. For some of you, it was a repetition. For others, it was new. We will come back to it, but not too much in one go. Yeah, it's a lot. When you study the books, you will find the description of these also as the five wisdoms. But actually, again, the translators, people talking with words, they make too many distinctions there. It's not five wisdoms. If you have one, you have all the others. You cannot have one without the other. They're all one and the same wisdom. One and the same timeless awareness. When you read the explanations and you hear, it's like looking at a jewel. Have you ever, you had a diamond in your hand, but you might have another kind of very clear-cut glass. When you turn it in the light, then the different facets of the jewel, they can sometimes have a blue color, sometimes a yellow, red. You know, the colors change according to how the light is reflected in the jewel. And this is how one should understand these five aspects to be just aspects of a jewel. Yeah. And the jewel is our mind. The jewel is the wish-fulfilling jewel of our mind. And when you look at one from one side or the other, then you see blue, and that's the Dhammadhatu. Then you see white, it's the mirror-like. And then you see yellow, it's like the earth when it's dry, you know, it's the equality. You see green when it's the all-perfecting. And you see red when it is the finally distinguishing. This is just artificially attributing the colors, but they make so much sense that this model is actually serving very nicely. There's so much understanding in this model, which has developed over centuries. It didn't fall from the sky. It developed slowly. Yeah, it developed with time. Okay. Let's take a break, 20 minutes. We come back 10 minutes before 5, and then we will meditate a little bit. And probably with these words, which I have already used before, but now you will recognize them when I use them. Okay.